Welcome, guys. This is Clint Locklear with Man Strong Podcast. Let me ask you, have you ever heard this before? I would say most of y'all go to church, been to church, were drugged to church, something. And you've probably, even if you've never been to church, I'm sure you've heard this phrase. The meek shall inherit the earth. I've heard preachers say it. I've heard feminists say that. I've heard politicians say that. I've heard friends say that. I never heard it in the military, but besides the military, I've heard that over and over again in my 52 years on this earth. The meek shall inherit the earth. I've also used a quote that's just an old Japanese saying, better to be a warrior that gardens than be a gardener that has to go to war. See, those two are actually saying the same thing. But meek means something different today than it did back when the Bible was written. I know there's a lot of people that are going to disagree with that, but you need to understand language is not the same as it is today. We put today's meaning on words that we see in the Bible, the meek. So if you talk to a normal person today, what do they say a meek person is? They're humble. They're non-threatening. They're gentle. They don't have confrontations. They're not weak people, but pretty freaking close. See, Christians, I believe meek means the definitions I just gave you. And most Christians are wrong. And if you give that to a non-Christian, they're going to automatically think gentle, pushover, weak, spineless, cowardly, non-confrontational, not going to stand up for yourself, easily pushed around. But when you look at what that word meant at the time it was written, it's the same thing as it's better to be a warrior that gardens than a gardener that has to go to war. See, the meek back then, the definition of meek was someone who had a sword but chose to keep it sheathed. Weak, spineless pushovers, they don't have swords. They expect somebody else to protect them. The meek then that shall inherit the earth are people that have control even though they have a weapon that can kill people. And that's what men need to freaking be. One of my favorite persons to listen to is Jorgen Peterson. He's probably got 55 PhDs in psychology and all this other stuff. And he talks about men need to be dangerous. I heard him say this on a Joe Rogan show. Men need to be dangerous, then learn how to control it. That's meek. The meek shall inherit the earth. That doesn't mean that the person that's just waiting on the police to show up when something goes wrong, or they're waiting for the government to figure out how to make them financially stable. It means they can be dangerous and they have the self-discipline not to. Is that you? Are you really a dangerous person? Are you? I mean, I know all males think they are, but down deep when it's dark, no one else is around, are you truly a dangerous person? And I'm not talking about lip smacking and roostering and all that. I'm talking about, are you a dangerous person? If not, you should be. Your family needs you to be, and your country needs you to be. Your church needs you to be. But more importantly, your family needs you to be. The meek shall inherit the earth. Kind of changes that when you understand what meek was back when the Bible was written. See, when Jordan Peterson talks about men should be dangerous, I think he's absolutely right. That's the reason most boys play contact sports. They love to wrestle. They love to get in scrapes. They do dangerous things like climbing up trees and swimming where they shouldn't, riding go-karts too fast. They learn how to be a little dangerous, and then they learn to control it. Now, if they don't control it, that's a problem. That's not a real man. But if they learn to control it, that's what society needs. Because if you need to stand up, you've got the ability to stand up. If you have to be aggressive, you actually have the ability not to talk about aggression, but to get downright old school biblical aggressive. That's what men should be. Your grandparents were. Guarantee it. Their grandparents were. Their parents were. That's what America used to be. Something that could be extremely dangerous. But we chose to be better people. When we look around the world today, we need dangerous people with control. Because bullies don't mess with dangerous people with control. They know better. Down deep, they may try to get away with some stuff, but they know better. It's part of the reason I talk about grown men today should learn to be stronger. If your testosterone is low, get it fixed. For one, you're going to have less chance of prostate problems and heart attacks. You're not going to be so moody. You're not going to weep at every commercial you see on TV. You'll be able to act like what you should be, and that's a man. So get your testosterone fixed. But you should be stronger. You should know that if you are needed for something, you've got the strength to actually pull something off. You can actually move well enough to do man's work when man's work is needed. The meek shall inherit the earth. Now I want to think about our sponsor, which is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. He's got a full line of trapping supplies. He's got stuff for fishing. He's got all kind of predator calls. He makes copper trap tags. I use them in a lot of different ways. Let me give you a little advice. If you're thinking about starting a business, think about who your clients are. You could make really cool, almost like dog tag necklaces out of trap tags. They could say your business, say a neat little saying. They can have a motivational say on there. Whatever it is, you can give them out. People remember stuff like that. He's got stuff for bear and hogs, but more importantly, he's an honest company. He does honest work. He busts his butt to get the product out as soon as you place orders. Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Now I want to talk a little bit about fear. See, I don't think the meek are fearful. But fear is powerful. And we're seeing that a lot in our world today. Everything is scary. Everything is scary. Politics is scary. Food's scary. Health is scary. The stock market's scary. Everything is scary. And it's promoted that way. It's marketing. And here's a little thing just to think about when you're thinking about COVID. And I'm going to say something before I read this. There's a good chance I've got COVID right now. I won't know for a couple of days. I'm not worried about it. I do extreme things to make sure that my immune system is on high. Unless it drops below 15 degrees, I don't put on britches. I wear shorts. And when I go walking and the wind's howling, which me and my wife walk every day, it gets freaking cold. It's good for your immune system. I push my body in the weight room all the time. I eat high density food all the time. I'm not the cleanest person in the world on purpose, because that builds a stronger immune system. So if COVID gets me, it gets me. But it's going to have to work really hard. If I don't have any symptoms as of right now, I'm going to be taking a test in a couple of days. We had my wife's sister come over to the house. We did some things together. She had her mask on. She was around someone that was COVID positive. She kept testing negative. 2 days after she left, she tested positive. So, may or may not overly concerned, but it's just something you got to deal with, like a cold or a flu. 99.something% survival rate. But this is from a guy on Twitter. I don't know who he is, Jeff Nelson. COVID is a true killer. So far, it has killed flu, it's killed cancer, it's killed heart disease. It's killed the ability to think, it's killed logic, it's killed common sense, it's killed the economy. It's killing the working class, it's killing millions of jobs, it's killing small businesses, it's killing human connection, love, and compassion. Scary. It's scary what our government is doing with it. It's scary how people are reacting to it. And when you watch what happened back in March, everything was based on fear. Now, if you're a younger person, you're going to have to go back in the archives of Netflix or wherever you find old movies today. I don't know. But look up the original Point Break. Keanu Reeves was in this one and Patrick Swayze. There was one line in that movie that stuck with me, I guess now, for 30 years. Fear causes hesitation. Hesitation causes that fear to become your worst reality. And he was telling this Keanu Reeves when they were hooking him up to a parachute to jump about 5,000 feet up in the air, and he's never done it before. Fear causes hesitation. Hesitation causes your worst fear to become reality. Fear. Now, I want to read from a book that I'm reading just because I've talked about investment last week. So I'm doing research in many different ways. I've looked up books that are very common that people that get into investing read. One of them is called Investing in the Zone. It was written back in 2000. But there were so many people recommending it, I bought it and I started reading it. And I stopped it when I came to this point because I thought this would be great for the show. Now, he's talking about trading. But wherever you're at in your life, I want you to substitute what you're having a problem with. It could be dieting. It could be working out. It could be a revenue stream. It could be your business. It could be how you deal with your wife or your kids. It could be a boss. It could be a hobby. It could be politics. It could even be COVID. But he's talking about fear, and he's talking about trading from a psychological point of view. And instead of trying to come up with a system to trade, he studied good traders and bad traders, and he's broke it down on a psychological level where he's not, what I love about him so far is he's, all he wants you to do is think. And you're probably going to have to think very different as a trader than you are as an employee or as a business owner or with someone with a PhD in finance or whatever. The market is very different. And smart people get into the market and they think that they can just have this certain system or whatever that they're going to do because they saw somebody on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram. And they think they're smart and it makes sense and they jump into it and they get crushed. But one thing about traders that is very clear to this man that wrote this book, good traders, one, have discipline, which that's not an American trait anymore. It's not a man trait either anymore. They have a healthy understanding of the risk, but they really don't have fear. And I want you to think about this because I'm going to put this in a little bit different way. I've talked about revenue streams, especially today, why it's so important that you start building your own revenue streams. You as a man need to take care of your finances and don't rely on everybody else. It used to be just an understood man thing to know. But you're looking at a revenue stream. Say you got to spend $300 on something. We'll call it widget X. But what if you don't get enough customers to pay for widget X? What if it's a failure? What if you don't make money? What if you just break even? What if you waste your time? See, because everybody that's ever looked at revenue streams, I guarantee you this has went through their head. At least for beginning entrepreneurs, it does. Guys that's been around a long time, not so much. But new people trying to figure this out, it's scary because they look at fear and they let the fear control them. So I'm going to read this, but whatever it is, this applies to you, change trading and put in what it is. 95% of the trading errors you're likely to make, causing the money just to evaporate before your eyes, will stem from your attitude about being wrong. Losing money, missing out, leaving money on the table. What I call the four primary trading fears. Like I said, this could easily be for revenue streams. Now you may be saying to yourself, I don't know about this. I've always thought traders should have a healthy fear of the markets. Again, this is perfectly logical and a reasonable assumption. But when it comes to trading, your fears will act against you in such a way that it will cause the very thing you're afraid of to actually happen. Fear causes hesitation, and hesitation causes your worst fear to become your reality. Your fear will act upon your perception of the market information in a way that will cause you to do something that ends up making you wrong. When you are fearful, no other possibility exists. You can't perceive other possibilities or act on them properly. Even if you did manage to perceive them, your fear is immobilizing. Physically, it causes us to freeze or run, flight or fight. Mentally, it causes us to narrow our attention to the object of our fear. This means that thoughts about other possibilities, as well as other available information from the market, get blocked. You won't think about the rational things you learned about the market until you are no longer afraid and the event is over. You will likely think to yourself, I knew that. Why didn't I think of that then? Why couldn't I act on it then? It's extremely difficult to perceive that the source of these problems is our own inappropriate attitudes. This is what makes fear so insidious. That's about trading. I can write that about trapping, hunting, business, revenue streams, family. You could change all kind of words out to do that. You're good at catching animals, and you're going to start an ADC business. You're freaking out over the website. Your fear, you're not going to get it just right. You don't know about the pricing, so you're freaking out over the pricing because you're afraid you're going to lose money on the table, leave money on the table, or you're going to charge too much and not get customers. You're going to be afraid you don't have the right equipment. You're going to have fear the phone won't ring. You're going to have fear that, you know, you're going to be homeless without a family because you made such a stupid decision. Everybody's going to make fun of you. I can go on and on. With my business course, I've talked to several people that have told me basically this exact same thing. Fear. That's something, as a man, you're going to have to learn to control. You can be afraid. I can tell you when I was getting on helicopters with green face paint going into foreign countries, locked and loaded, seeing tracers come across the sky towards us, I was afraid. Every man in that helicopter was afraid. The pilots were afraid. But you just do the best you can. And that's really all you have to do if you're looking at starting a revenue stream. You do the best you can with the information you have, and you don't just focus on what's causing you fear with that business. This is a strange concept to me now because I've been an entrepreneur for so many years. I'll look at information. I will look at the market. I will, you know, to listen to what customers are telling me, what they like, what they don't like. And if I can find a way to have a product that's going to help them that way, most of the time, unless it's too technical or too much in the manufacturing, or there's too much of an outlay at the beginning, because that's not the way my revenue streams work. I don't go into debt ever for business. I pull the trigger. I take a chance. I win more than I lose, but I don't put so much stock in the new product that if it's not just a killer seller, I don't get that upset. I'm already looking for the next one. See, I've gotten over the fear part of being an entrepreneur. But to someone that's starting out, it can lock you down tighter than a drum. I was reading a book years ago, and I thought this was pretty smart because it was always talking about fear, but it did it in a different way. The very next time that you're afraid of something, and it can be as something as simple as it's raining really hard and your kids aren't home and you're pitching them in a ditch or upside down, you know, hanging off a cliff, or they get ran over by an 18-wheeler. All the stuff that goes through your head, because I've done this with my wife when I don't know where she is and it's bad weather and she should have been home. Your brain starts to go, that's all you can focus on, right? Keep a notebook with you. Train yourself to realize how, what's the right word? It's not unlogical. It's irrational, it is. So if you're worried about your wife not making it home or your kids, write it down in there and write what you think is a probability of them not making it. Write it all out. And then the next time you're thinking about a revenue stream and you're scared of the phone you start one and you're afraid you're not going to have any customers and all this type stuff, write that fear down. Write out what you think that means to you in the end. Write it down. The stock market goes up or down and you got your 401k in there and it freaks you out. Write down what you think those fears are. I'm not going to have enough to retire. I'm losing money. I'm this, that, and the other. Write them down, all of them. You won't have to do this for more than about a month. And I know most of you actually won't do this, but hopefully it'll get you to think about it. And then at the end of the month, I want you to go back through that notebook. And I want you to go, well, here was four times I thought for sure my kids were splattered on the road because they were home late. And they're perfectly fine. Customers did call. The stock market came back up, or is coming back up. So it's not the absolute destruction of my retirement that I thought it was. I thought I was not going to be able to make car payments and I was going to lose my car. Whatever it is, write them down, read them out at the end of the month. If you do that, you're going to see that about 99% of those never came true. Never. But in your world at the time, could you think on anything else? Nope. Did you believe the worst was going to happen? Absolutely. If you totally focus on what this administration is doing right now in Washington, you're automatically going to think the world is over. They're going to destroy our country. Maybe. Maybe not. We thought the same thing when Obama came in. I mean, they weren't calling us MAGA terrorists, which I've heard like 65 times this week from politicians and newspapers. It is a little different, I'll give you that. But after 6 months or a year, 2 years of Biden, before he just like falls off the podium, breaks his neck, or has to go to a nursing home, or he can't speak anymore, whatever's going to happen to the poor guy, everything's going to get refocused on the vice president. She's a Marxist, which she is, and she's a socialist, and she hates white people, which she seems to. And all this, yes, yes, it could be distracting. But can you control what Biden is doing right now in Washington? Do you have any control over that at all? The answer is no. But what you have control over is how you treat people, how you take care of yourself and your family, how you handle your own money issues, how you can build for the future, how you can find opportunities in the crazy world it looks like we're getting ready to go into. Because I promise you, there will be opportunities. Zoom was just another app till COVID hit. Bitcoin, I should have bought it back when it was like $3 a piece. There's always opportunities. I'll give you a real clear example. If you know how to grow a garden, because they're screwing with the oil prices and the energy, which is going to cause other prices to go up, which is going to cause food to go up, and you can grow some and sell it to your neighbors, you're going to have way more market than you can probably fulfill. In a half acre garden, yes, you can make $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 off of it if you learn how to do that correctly. If you got more land, you can do even more. See, that's an opportunity. I just bought half a beef along with Tim. We placed this order back, I don't know, March. This is the first time that we could get it into a slaughterhouse because so many people panicked over COVID and bought so many animals under panic that it's completely screwed up the whole system. People that run slaughterhouses, they're making money as fast as they can make it. Think about that. Every time something negative happens, there's always opportunity, but you won't see it if you're in complete lockdown of fear. You just won't. See, I can tell you of a personal note, fear. And when people found out I was doing this, everybody was trying to be helpful, because that's what people want to do, that, you know, that I'm friends with. When I started getting into the deer side and the hog side of lure making, man, that's tough. That's not like trapping. You're dealing with multi-million dollar budgets. You're dealing with all these channels, the marketing, the store shelves, everything like that. You're worried about all, you know, you got to worry about the name brands. You're going to have to get, you know, big name people to push it, or you're not going to sell a whole bunch. And every bit of that is true. But see, I don't focus on the fear when it comes to being an entrepreneur anymore. I put it out there. My tactical nuke pawpaw, I sell more of it than anything else that I make in trapping. That's counting cat collector and everything else. Way more. I've never bought a commercial. I've never hired a spokesman. I've never done all the traditional things that traditional deer lure companies do. I built a hell of a product. I put it in people's hands, and now they sell it for me on YouTube because they're seeing results they've never seen from the very cheap non-lure side of the deer industry. But if I would have listened to everybody tell me why I couldn't get into that unless I was going to spend millions of dollars, that's a revenue stream I didn't have 3 years ago that I have today. Don't focus on the fear. I'm not saying just be super risky. But when you find yourself stressing out over something, like people stress out over the font of their website, or they may not have the best looking pictures, or they may have something on that website that doesn't look as professional as Coca-Cola. And they stress and they stress and they stress. If you give people value, they don't care. Have you seen my websites? There's misspellings all over that thing. I've written 3 books. I've sold a ton of books. There's bad grammar and there's bad spelling in every one of them. And I've had people comment on that after or before they talk about how much they enjoyed the book and what they learned. I'm not an English major. I'm not. I should, by skill of the English language, I should never write a book. I wrote 3. And it's been a good revenue stream. It still is. Because I can't let a possible downside always discourage what I'm going to do. And that's the way I want you to start thinking. It's important. It's something you need to teach your kids. They need the example from you like I got it from my mother. I was on all kind of entrepreneur adventures before I knew what it was. It was just the way that it was. Stepdad didn't really supply much money. She had to do it. She found very creative ways to do it. So I was kind of brought into that. And maybe you weren't. That's okay. You can still do it. You don't have to be a genius to have a revenue stream. You don't have to be brilliant to have money. Just look at most people in the Congress and Senate. They could not run a kid's lemonade stand without going broke within 24 hours, and they're running our government. If they can run the government, by God, you can run a revenue stream. Because I promise you, if you're listening to this show, you're smarter than almost everybody in Congress and Senate. Have you listened to them morons talk? The stupidity that comes out of their mouth. I guarantee you, you're smarter than they are. And they made it to Congress. Don't let fear stop you. Because 99% of the time, just like COVID, the worst doesn't happen. Now I want to switch subjects a little bit because I like talking about this kind of stuff. I talked last time, it was about a month ago actually. It'll be in a month today. And I talked about picking on a muscle group for a month, and I was going to do my triceps. So I ran this experiment on myself. And to me, the bigger that my triceps get, the more energy they can produce, which means I can push more. And I'm kind of wanting to see what a 52-year-old can build up in bench. So that's important to me. It's just a game. It's just like business. It's a game. It's just like hunting or trapping or fishing. It's a game. It's like the stock market. It's a game. Everything's a game. It's not life or death most of the time, unless you're putting on green face paint and rucking up and going into somewhere where they want to shoot you. Most of the time, what everybody deals with on a day-to-day basis, bad bosses, everything, are games. That's all they are. So it's a game to me, and I'm experimenting. So if you don't remember what I said, I was going to do a tricep exercise every day for a month. And I did that for about 3 weeks. And what I noticed for myself was my triceps started getting really sore, like the ligaments and stuff. Now, what was amazing to me, though, which I don't do this very often because I'm not really concerned with measurements except for this progress, so it's not like something I do all the time, but because I said I was going to do this, I measured my arm, and within 2 weeks, because of my triceps working them for those 2 weeks, I gained a quarter inch on my arms. That may not sound like a lot, but when you're talking about muscle, that's a lot. So does that mean you could repeat this 4 times and have an inch bigger arm? I don't know. I doubt it. But I felt the strongest the first week, not so much the second week, and it started going downhill the third week. So I didn't do it the fourth week. So I'm going to call this bullying a muscle, and I'm going to do this every week. But I'm only going to pick on one muscle or bully one muscle a week. I'm not doing something like very big compound movements, because there's a whole lot goes on with that, and you got to think that you have to be able to recover. Small muscle groups recover faster than big muscle groups because they're well smaller. Bodybuilders do, 2-3 times a week, some of them just once a week. Powerlifters, on the other hand, are the strongest people on earth doing compound movements. And they want to have 2 times a week per main lift or muscle group. Think, squat and deadlift and bench, overhead press. But a lot of them, when you listen to people like Louis Simmons out of Westside Barbell, they may do triceps 4 or 5 times a week. They may do glutes 4 or 5 times a week. They may do hamstrings 4 or 5 times a week. They do their back every day. They're doing a different exercise every day. So my next experiment is I'm going to pick on something. And so what I'm doing this week is hammer curls. I don't do a whole lot for my biceps. It's not really that big much of a functional thing to me. I don't care about having big biceps. I want big triceps. But I do like having big forearms, because the heavier the bench press gets, the more stable everything seems to get, the stronger and bigger than my forearms get. So I'm doing hammer curls, which, if you've ever seen a bodybuilder, it looks like they got a baseball right up there next to their elbow on the top side of their forearm. That's what that really builds. It does do some for your bicep, but it's mostly builds that muscle that's on top of your forearm right there. And it goes into your bicep muscle underneath. So I'm going to do that this week. Next week, I may do triceps again. The week after that, I may do side lateral raises for my shoulders. You could do it for traps. You could do it for forearms. You could do it for calves. You could do it for rear delts. You could do it on your neck. But pick, just for your own, because it was really, it seemed to be very helpful when I did it for a solid week. And then it kind of went down a little bit. Just do it. If you're lifting weights, try that yourself. Just pick something you can isolate and do 4 or 5 sets, not to failure. Get a good workout in on that. Forget about it. Go to your regular workout. Really, really cool. Now, the next thing I want to talk about with this before we close is a Zercher squat. Zercher is a guy, apparently, he sounds like a Russian or somewhere from Eastern Europe that could not get a squat rack when he was in prison. And so what he did is he would put weight on a regular barbell. He would bend over, put it in the crotch of his elbows and hold it. They were just balanced on his elbows, and he'd put his hands up towards his face. And that was the only way he could squat, because if you've got 300, 400, 500 pounds on there, you can't just like clean and press it and put it on your shoulders. He didn't have a squat rack. So he apparently was very strong and can use a lot of weight at this. And it became somewhat of a not so popular movement, because it's more of a back movement than it is a leg movement. And that's what I want you to think about. You want to be the strongest man you can be. Think of yourself like a gorilla. A big, hairy, silverback gorilla. Yeah, they've got some chest muscles. Yes, they've got some arm muscles. But have you seen their freaking backs? They can tear a human being apart with their hands. They got big backs. They got muscles everywhere on their back. Because they're always pulling, climbing, stuff like that. Huge. To me, having a strong back, for one, it keeps you from having back problems. But two, it's just more practical. Like in my business, when I got to carry heavy buckets around, the stronger my back is, the easier it is. When I have to change out, and I'm looking at it right now because I'm going to have to in a few weeks. When I switch out 55-gallon drums of glycerin by myself, that's 580 pounds. I've got to flip up on a cart. I can't do that with a weak back. I can't bench press what I bench press with a weak back. So I'm always thinking about my back. How can I get that stronger? Well, the Zercher squat, you hold in your elbows, and it is highly uncomfortable to do that. It really is. I mean, this dude must have been one dedicated monster to do this with that much weight. But for Christmas, wife wanted to know what I wanted for my birthday, so I told her, I showed her a link to Texas Strength Equipment, out of Texas, of course. And they have a Zercher squat and front squat harness. It's like this metal thing that hooks over my shoulder and it comes together in the middle. It's got 3 big spikes on it. Looks like something, you know, Gene Simmons would wear in Kiss. But the Zercher squat is about at your, I don't know, it's above your belly button and below your sternum. There's these 2 pins that stick out. And then it's got 2 pins at the top that you can front squat with, which is really cool because I can't regular squat because I can't get my shoulders back. So I can front squat and I can Zercher squat with this. And the first time I used it, I texted my wife and I showed her a picture of it and said, thanks for the most torturous device I've ever seen used in my life. The reason I'm saying that is, it's a totally different exercise than anything I've ever done for my back. I deadlift. I rack pull. I deadlift and rack pull with bands. I do good mornings with free weights. And I do good mornings with a cable on my belt squat. I'm always trying to build my back. That's the most important thing to me, is the back. Because that's the most functional for a man to have. But the Zercher squat, you put this harness on, and the 2 lower pins, and several companies make these. These just had the best reviews, and they've got great admiration in the powerlifting community, so stuff don't break. And you hook this, you got to balance the bar, because they're only about 5 inches apart, so you get it in the dead center, and you kind of pull it back on yourself. You step back from the squat rack and you squat. you break at your knees and your hips, you go down as far as you can and you come up. What's different about the Zercher squat is the weight is on your front and it pulls you forward. So you got to fight that all the time. Today, that's what I did on back. Instead of deadlifting, I did Zercher squats. I'm looking at the bar right now because it's still on the squat rack. And it's only 205. That's it. That's an ass-kicking 205. Because when you come down, if you don't keep such a tight core, you're going to collapse forward. Now, when you start with whatever you can do and do this. I think the harness cost, it's like $99 or $120 or something. It wasn't bad. But there's a difference when I do the Zercher squat than anything else that I do. And I'm going to try to describe this so it kind of makes sense. When I do deadlifts, you really feel it in the like your back straps that go up your spine. Starts at your lower back and it gets up in your middle back. You feel it on your traps. When you do good mornings, you feel it on your lower back up into your spinal erectors. When I do rack pulls, especially with bands, I feel it in my lower back, but if I pull all the way back with the bands, it lights up all of my upper back along with my spinal erectors. The Zercher squat does something that I don't even know or knew that there was muscle there. After you do 4 or 5 sets of Zercher squats, I'm only doing 5 reps. They're not easy. I'm not pulling any punches here. They are not easy. You feel back muscles that start on the sides of your ribs and go all the way across your backbone, all the way to the other side of your ribs, all the way up to your upper back, all the way down to your lower back. I never feel anything like that with deadlifts, rack pulls, good mornings, anything. It's lighting up parts of my back that I didn't really know was there. And what it feels like, because I'm sure I'm going to get used to this. I've been doing it since Christmas. It almost feels, and this may sound terrible, but it's actually a really good feeling. When you get done, like someone has took like a bamboo cane and not slapped you where you brought welts up, but hit you enough that it was sore from rib cage to rib cage, all the way across your back. I know it's building stuff I have not touched with everything else that I'm doing. So if you want to be strong, because I can tell you the more Zercher squats I do, the easier deadlifting is, the easier rack pulls are, because it's building something I quite don't even know what it is. So if you're looking to build a strong back, I would recommend one of the harnesses. You can get them from Westside Barbell, but I don't think they have the points up top for the front squat. I think Titan Fitness has one. It's probably a lot cheaper or a little bit cheaper. But if you're wanting to build that gorilla back, I think this could be a missing link in what a lot of people do with stiff-legged. That's not right. Stiff leg deadlifts, or Roman deadlift, or Romanian deadlifts, or trap bar deadlifts, or regular deadlifts, or rack pulls. It hits stuff that I didn't know was there. And you may be surprised, no matter how strong you think your back is, it will light you up. It will humble you at the same time. But you stand up so freaking straight. Once everything kind of calms back down, you got amazing posture from that. It's just a cool exercise. So if you're into that type of thing and you're looking to get stronger, really look at the Zercher squat. I recommend the harness just because using your elbows is freaking brutal. But guys, think about what we said today. What is meek? And they will inherit the earth. Don't focus on fear because you're wrong almost all the time. That's a skill you're going to have to work on. Work on it. And I will talk to y'all next week.